Chapter 12. A skyship flies low across the ocean, twin plumes of light streaming from the wings. Cables run from its underside at a 45-degree angle, taut, linking it to a small sea shuttle, towing it over wave tops. The vagrant stands at the prow, a smile on his face. Jem and Reela stand with him, while Delta remains flat on the deck, still covered by the vagrant's old coat. Every so often, the vagrant glances at Jem, until the other man exclaims, "All right, I admit it. This was a good idea." The vagrant raises his chin slightly, catching Jem's eye before bringing it down, a grand nod. Because they only have one able pilot, they are forced to stop at night, the skyship putting down on open water. There has been a natural segregation during the day, Reela, Jem and the vagrant staying on the sea shuttle, while the lieutenant and the other soldiers keep to the skyship. At night, Jem crosses that line, going and sitting with the lieutenant as she tends to the one conscious soldier and the two unconscious ones.
"How are they doing?"
"They're alive," replies the lieutenant, matter-of-factly. "For now."
"How about him?"
He points to the conscious soldier, the one with the dent in his helmet.
"Not so good. He's barely talking and not accepting any food."
To his surprise, the soldier they're discussing has already fallen into a light, unhappy sleep.
"How about you?"
"I'm able. Tired from the flying and..."
She trails off for a moment.
"I'll be ready to pick up again in the morning."
"Good. My name is Jem, by the way. What's yours?"
"Why do you want to know?"
Jem starts to smile, then puts a hand to his mouth, self-conscious.
"Because a very wise person once told me that it's harder to be angry with someone when you know who they are."
She doesn't look convinced by his argument, but replies anyway.
"Lieutenant Mazar." "No, just Mazar.
They've probably already stripped me of rank and condemned me for this."
"Do they know what's happened?"
"They know enough," she says. "It's obvious that we failed. Details don't matter."
Jem bravely tries to save the conversation. "Good to meet you, anyway. Hungry?"
"We have rations."
"Oh." There is a moment, awkward. Then Mazar says,
"I have to rest."
Defeated, Jem returns to the sea shuttle. Mazar waits to be sure that Jem has gone before slumping with relief. She was sure he suspected. Why else would he come with questions? She doesn't know what to make of the man, hasn't known what to make of anything since Delta destroyed her world. Only two things are clear. She cannot live with Delta's displeasure, and she cannot die until she has found some way to atone. Whenever she closes her eyes, Delta's stare back, twin windows to another world of storm and shade. There will be no rest tonight. Sleep more of a threat to her now than a comfort. Her soldiers have broken under the pressure. Unable to reconcile their duty with Delta's judgment, unable to live with themselves, unable to act, they retreat to a place of twilight, paralyzed.
"Nobody should have to suffer this way," she thinks. "Nobody."
She gets up. Checks that Jem really has gone and isn't hiding nearby. No one lurks on the other side of the hatch, and no one clings to the wing outside. A light plays on the sea shuttle opposite, highlighting chattering faces.
To Mazar, their happiness is alien, a thing to be studied at a remove, no longer understood. The hatch is resealed, and she returns to her seat. For a while, the display on the inside of the cockpit entertains. Repeated warnings flash that comms and navigation have failed, jarring next to the serene state of the primary systems. Soundproofing keeps the noise of the waves at bay, and she turns off audio output. In the quiet, it is easy to hear the sounds of her companion's breathing. Steady, slow, save for the occasional gasp as some new dream terror presents itself. Mazar nearly breaks into a litany to ask forgiveness, but catches herself. She does not expect to be forgiven for this, would not take it even if offered. They are calming now, the three soldiers settling into a deeper, more natural sleep. Their breath seems to find a rhythm, not quite in time, but complementary, three waves whispering on neighboring shores. Mazar takes off her helmet. Her attempt to stow it in the nearby shelf fails. Preoccupied fingers fumble and it falls, hitting the floor, sounding sharp, angry, bouncing twice, rolling before coming to a scraping stop. Her hands move quickly, covering her crumpling face. Tears come and shoulders shake, wretched, while one set of breathing slows nearby, hushing, hushing, to a final sigh. She catches herself, wipes at tears, and strains to listen. Only two sets of breathing remain, softer now, a pair of divers leading each other to the unexplored deep. Slowly, they fade, taken by the poison she administered. In the dark, it is as if they are moving further away, wandering together, leaving Mazar alone. In the morning, the skyship resumes its journey. There are no communications active, the link to the network completely severed. This has several effects. The skyship cannot communicate or update navigation data, and it cannot be interfered with remotely, blissfully ignorant of any shutdown orders coming from the Knight Commander. On the Sea Shuttle, Rila plonks herself down next to Delta. She fusses, tucking a corner of the coat back under the Immortal's shoulder. Such is Delta's size that the coat cannot cover her completely. Rila has given up worrying about feet or lower legs. However, one of Delta's arms sticks out, elbow, wrist, and hand exposed. Rila looks at it for a while, trying to decide what to do. Neither Jem nor the Vagrant have noticed, one talking, worried, the other, equally worried, listening. Rila works her fingers under Delta's wrist, first one hand, then the other. It isn't easy, and by the time she has managed it, small cheeks are flushed with effort. Setting her shoulders, Rila tries to lift Delta's arm onto her lap. With a grunt, she gets it off the floor, but can't raise it over her knee. The arm flops down again, Rila dragged with it, hair leaping forward to ambush her face. Hands trapped under a metal arm, Rila can only blow irritably at her hair. Eventually, it flops aside, releasing the left side of her face. Rila begins to rock back and forth on her bottom, gaining speed. Twice, three times she goes, pulling lightly on Delta's arm. On the fourth attempt, she throws herself back, adding momentum and body weight to childish strength. Her labors bear fruit. When she is settled again in a sitting position, Delta's hand is in her lap. She puts her hand against the Immortal's, comparing them. Her fingertips barely cross the silver expanse of palm. This observation leads to a more in-depth exploration. A lack of lines is noted, the skin smooth,
flawless, unlike the craggy surface of her own. Perhaps it is the smoothness, perhaps it is the surprising warmth, but Delta's hand feels almost soft. Rila leans down, planting a kiss in the center of the palm, then turns her head, nuzzling, making a bed for her cheek. Hunched over, the girl should be anything but comfortable. Childish biology triumphs, however, and sleep comes soon after. The vagrant patrols the front rail of the sea shuttle, checking each cable is secure. Eyebrows raise as his gaze falls on the horizon, where sun's light breaks the sea's illusion of infinity, picking out cliffs and making cove-shaped shadows. Above them, the skyship alters its course, pulling them towards one of the many darknesses that eventually reveals itself to be a beach. The sea shuttle is eased onto the stones, and the vagrant begins detaching cables even as the skyship comes down to land. Jem comes over.
I think we have a problem.
The vagrant pauses, looks up at him.
It's Rila.
Whirling round, the vagrant finds Rila sleeping at Delta's side, both of them covered by his coat. He moves closer, frowning at the way the girl is so well tucked in.
I just found them like that.
At the vagrant's shake of the head, he adds hastily, I'd only turned away for a second, and she knew not to go near Delta. I told her lots of times. It isn't my fault. Amber eyes glare, and Jem takes a step back, involuntary. The vagrant bends down over the prostrate pair. Though Delta's eyes are open, they stare straight up, unfocused. He reaches out very slowly, very carefully, pausing at the slightest twitch or sound until he has a good grip on the coat's collar. Behind them, the skyship settles onto the beach, hatch springing open, allowing Mazar to jump down and begin jogging towards them. She is armoured for battle, a rifle slung over her shoulder. As soon as she sees what the vagrant is doing, she accelerates.
"Don't do it!" she cries.
The vagrant flinches in surprise and Jem ducks. Mazar clears the last of the distance between them, hauling herself onto the sea shuttle.
"Don't!"
she pleads.
"Don't disturb her!"
The vagrant points at Rila and raises his hands, exasperated.
You can't help the girl now.
The vagrant shakes his head, continues with his work. Further attempts to persuade him are ignored, and both Mazar and Jem back away. He eases the corner of his coat from under Rila and slowly peels it back until she is uncovered. Eyes flutter open, meeting his. The vagrant puts a finger to his lips, and Rila does the same. Nodding, the vagrant supports her weight as Rila slips her arm from Delta's. Silver fingers curl, eclipsing Rila's hand, holding it tight. Feeling the resistance, the vagrant freezes. Mazar swings off the side of the sea shuttle, and Jem ducks, both moving out of sight. Rila's arms have become a slope that run from Delta up to the vagrant. While the vagrant holds very still, Rila tugs harder. Delta blinks. Rila tugs again, and Delta's head turns to look at her. There is a moment where nobody moves. Then Rila smiles and nods towards the skyship. The vagrant also nods, beckoning her with a finger, offering her a hand. Delta's surprise strikes them both like a strong breeze. She takes the vagrant's hand, though she needs neither man nor girl to help her up, and stands in a single fluid moment. The coat falls in the space between them, making a worn puddle of fabric at their feet.
Delta looks down at it, and the vagrant finds he has been released. He crouches down and picks up the coat, offering it up to Delta, who accepts without comment. At another tug from Rila, Delta allows herself to be guided towards the skyship. The vagrant goes to follow, but a plaintive hum from the deck stops him. The source is Delta's sword, lying abandoned, staring at the space where recently there was a winged back, forlorn. He gets up, walks over to it, and the eye swivels towards him, plaintive. Sighing, he picks it up, hurrying to join the others. Soon they have all climbed into the skyship. No longer tied down, it rises easily into the air, leaving the sea shuttle to the mercy of the waves. Mazar keeps the skyship low, making regular adjustments to accommodate uneven scenery. Cliffs are left behind, replaced with sodden marshland and deep lakes. Tower tops and antennae, rusted, break the surface in places, giving hints of buried civilization. These too give way to watery fields, long grasses sprouting in clumps, wild patches on the head of a balding man. The vagrant leans forward, pointing at the transparent panels by their feet. Mazar slows the skyship and looks down. She sees a long caravan, strung out, meat runners transporting their trade. A variety of animals are with them. Even from a distance, they are sad and scrawny specimens. The caravan's passage is clear, its progress ploughed through soft earth. However, something is wrong. One of the heavy wagons leans, its wheel sunk too low. Beasts are brought forward, the humans working quickly to try and pull the wheel free. It is quite a show. It is not what the vagrant is pointing at. Things are pulling themselves from the ground nearby. They move like worms, but are too big to be worms, each about the size of a large dog. Mazar guesses there are at least a dozen of them.
Doesn't look good for those meat runners. Have you fought that kind of infernal before?
The vagrant doesn't answer, just points down again more firmly.
You want me to go down there? Mazar asks.
The vagrant nods. Jem steps into the cockpit, drawn by the noise.
Something wrong?
His quick eyes take in the scene below.
Why are we getting closer to that?
Realizing the vagrant is behind this, he grabs the other man's outstretched arm.
This is a mistake. We need to get Rila to safety. We need to get us to safety. And,
he drops his voice,
what about Delta? Who knows what she'll do? It's too risky.
As the skyship descends, Jem's voice takes on a pleading quality.
Just for once, please, can we do things my way?
Nobody answers, and the pleading stops, replaced by bitterness.
We'll regret this. I have no assisted targeting, Mazar says. Do you want me to fire anyway?
The vagrant shakes his head, continuing to point down.
I'm wary of landing in that soup. We could get snarled. If it were up to me, I'd bring us in low enough for you to jump out, but keep us airborne. That work for you?
The vagrant nods.
Okay. Move to the hatch. We'll be green in 60. I'll get you as close as I can.
As the vagrant leaves, she adds, There's a lot of them. You sure you can handle it alone? This time, the vagrant does not nod, his gesture non-committal. Jem's voice rises to a shout.
You don't know! You're going down there and you're not even sure you'll survive! You're an idiot!
The vagrant pushes past Jem, going through the hold to the hatch, and sure enough, a minute later, it is opening.
The ground is getting closer, near enough to jump, far enough for second thoughts. The vagrant grips the sides of the hatch, takes a breath, and heaves himself out, jumping, flailing, falling. Luckily, he does not fall for long. Boots connect with earth already churned by the skyship's vertical engines, plunging deep, twin knives into soft butter. The vagrant blinks, takes in his situation. Already the meat runners have tethered several beasts to the stricken wagon, coordinating the first attempt to tug it out. Meanwhile, the worm-like things have nearly managed to struggle free. The vagrant can empathize, his own legs buried up to the knee. Finding a nearby clump of weeds, he begins to pull himself out, constantly sprayed by mud and filth as the skyship hovers overhead. Cries are going up now, the meat runners seeing the infernal threat approaching. A few draw slender blades of curving glass, moving to defend their fellows while the rest redouble their efforts. Now free of the ground, the worm-like things shiver, connecting other joints, waking sleeping tendons. Each one has a set of 8 legs, feline, furless, that are tucked away whilst underground. These legs stretch, claws flexing, the movement of muscle easy to trace. One by one, the infernals stand up. Slung back on the top of their worm mouths is what appears at first glance to be a ridge of skin, but is in fact a second head. Like hoods, the infernals pull them down, and there is a succession of wet clicks as each sphinx head locks into place. Pointed ears flick into life. Eyes, some blue, some green, all glowing, adjust to the light, pupils narrowing to razor slits. The living quickly draw their attention. Though the infernals have arrived together, they do not act as one, picking targets seemingly at random, some advancing towards the meat runner guards, others prowling round, seeking softer targets. Beasts and humans wail together, their panic blending, indistinguishable. At last, the vagrant is able to stand up. He claws the mud from his face and draws Delta's sword, rushing forward, taking breath as he closes on the nearest infernal. Something catches in his throat, however, and singing makes way for coughing. Glass blades flash out, and claws flash back faster. Both find their targets, but the infernals feel no pain, the damage to their shells cosmetic. By contrast, the meat runners stagger back, precious blood staining their robes. Delta's sword watches one of the infernals crouch, preparing to spring. Its eye looks to the vagrant as he spits out a lump of brown, then back to the infernal as it sails towards them. The vagrant jumps sideways, twisting, inhaling, drawing back Delta's sword as the infernal lands alongside. Its jaws snap at him as he brings down the weapon. Blue light surrounds the blade as it cracks the sphinx head, making contact with the second layer of flesh beneath. Keen metal touches the taut, thin skin, and it splits like overripe fruit, the whole body popping, spilling innards twice burnt by sword and sun's light. The remaining infernals all turn to the new threat, snarling. But Delta's sword meets their gaze, unflinching. Its wings give a proud flap, urging the vagrant forward. He steps towards them, singing a second time, Delta's sword joining him. Their song drowns out the growling, each infernal slapped by the sound, flinching away, scraggy ears plastering themselves flat on every head. The vagrant advances, and they all retreat. Silver wings stretch in newfound confidence, and the vagrant takes breath to sing again. And then, as if from the earth, something else answers, a shuddering moan that seems to be felt through the feet as much as heard. A row of ears bounce back up again, and sharp teeth are bared.
the cat-like faces easily conveying a sense of sudden smugness. While the meat runners redouble their efforts to free the wagon, there is a second rumble. The eye in Delta's sword jerks down, not directly, not beneath the vagrant, but at an angle. The vagrant follows the line of its gaze, finds he is looking at a spot directly underneath the skyship. He raises the sword, waving it, giving a signal to Mazar. Too late. Like an eruption of lava, a pillar of flesh and fangs bursts from the earth. It reaches up, a 10-foot-wide V of teeth that snaps shut either side of the skyship. Wings buckle, light drives snuff out, and the body of the vehicle shrinks in on itself under the pressure with a shriek, sickening. The vagrant runs towards it, his sword arm dragging behind him. Silver wings droop, and an eye stares in horror. There is a pop, and the top of the cockpit detaches. A second pop, and two seats launch into the air, clear of danger. For a moment, the vagrant is distracted by them. At this height, only the undersides are visible, the occupants impossible to see. The Infernals sense that moment, leaping for him. Claws scrape down his backplate, scratching but not penetrating. He staggers forward, feet struggling to free themselves from the mud, and nearly falls. By the time he has caught his balance, they are on him, circling quicker than he can, lashing out at his back. He makes wide swings with the sword, catching one, bursting it. And always his eyes flick up to the floating seats, each time an invitation for the enemy. The first seat comes into view. A small emergency light drive fires in controlled bursts, fighting gravity and the burdens placed beyond its design. Mazar sits in the chair, sighting up with her rifle. She struggles to do this, in part because she is moving, and in part because Jem is on her lap, his arms wrapped around her neck. The second seat glides in a more stately fashion. It is empty. Rila is still inside. Amber eyes and single eye go wide, turning back to the monstrous thing eating the skyship. The vagrant puts his back to the Infernals, raising the sword and humming a long note. The air about the blade quivers, distorting in colour. One of the Infernals moves to take advantage, is shot in the eye by a buzzing bullet. Steam hisses from the wound as essence burns. The next to try is shot in the temple, the one after that in the teeth. Locations matter little, for the Infernals have no vital organs. However, breaks in their shell can be fatal this far north, and these bullets sting enough to make them think twice. Lowering Delta's sword to point directly at the pillar of flesh, the vagrant opens his mouth, letting the hum expand into song. The air between sword tip and target sparks and shimmers, and a patch of ridged skin bursts into blue-tinged flame. In surprise, the Infernal roars, writhing, shaking the skyship, a dog with a rag doll. The vagrant continues to sing, and Mazar continues to fire. Worm-like bodies stagger. Stunned, flames lick across the giant Infernal, and still they keep going, till lungs burn and trigger pulls make clicks rather than bullets. With a final, inhuman howl, the pillar drops the skyship and draws back into the safety of the earth. Immediately, the minor Infernals do the same, retracting their feline limbs, casting off cat-faced hoods and burrowing down. As Mazar comes into land, the vagrant struggles towards the remains of the skyship, forcing tired legs onward. It is a sorry-looking thing now, a crushed insect. He does not bother with the buckled hatch, cutting a new entrance in the battered hull. There is little room to search inside, the hull reduced to an eighth of its former size. Curled on one knee is Delta. A silver ball wrapped in wings, statue still.
He squeezes in, clambering over, and two sets of little fingers hook around the top of the wings. A moment later, Rila's head peeks out. Amber eyes linger on a new bruise on her temple and one on her cheek, then come to rest on her smile. One set of little fingers wave. The vagrant stops, raises a weary hand, and waves back. She reaches out to him, and he closes the last of the gap, sliding her out of the winged cocoon and into his arms. For a long time, they simply hold each other. Safe.
"We've come into visual range of Seraph's Rock, sir."
The Knight Commander nods, tired. Seraph's Rock is their last stop before the rendezvous. Behind them, his fleet has left a trail of fire and carnage, no doubt matched by the other half of the fleet travelling with obeisance. By now, word of their coming must have spread. He wonders if they're going to meet resistance. In a way, he would welcome a real fight, something to test their mettle, something more glorious than shooting people as they fled or bombing them out of existence.
"Have they launched any of their ships, Captain?"
There is a pause as the captain confers with their scouts and his instruments.
"No, sir."
His reply sounds more like a sigh than he would like.
"Have they mounted any kind of defense at all?"
"There are people on the walls, and the docks are packed, sir."
"Easy targets,"
he thinks.
"Can you tell what they're doing?"
"It appears they're welcoming us, sir. They're singing."
"Singing?"
"Yes, sir. They're singing the Rite of Mercy. Would you like me to feed the audio to you direct?"
"That won't be necessary, Captain."
The Knight Commander gets up and walks over to the porthole. They're a long way south now, and encounters with the taint are frequent. The chances are that Seraph's Rock is corrupted, and he has his orders direct from Alpha of the Seven. They are very clear. But these people are asking for his help. They are invoking the Rite of Mercy. Perhaps they could be purged. Perhaps they could be saved. Surely that would be a better solution. He imagines going amongst them, basking in their song, purging, making them pure again. Then he imagines explaining his disobedience to obeisance, or rather, he cannot imagine it. He cannot think of any words that would breach her disapproval. The Knight Commander shakes his head, defeated. He has his orders. It is not his place to question or second-guess the Seven. He gives the word. The fleet opens fire. And on the walls and docks of Seraph's Rock, songs are swapped for screams. Then silence.